John Cryer, and this is the Undisclosed Addendum. And today we're talking about the third episode of HBO's documentary, The Case Against Adnan Syed, which, as promised, blew up the state's entire case, pretty much. And we're lucky enough to have with us three folks, all of whom who were featured on the documentary. We've got Rabia Chowdhury and Susan Simpson. Hey, guys.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Thanks so much for being here. But we also have Nikisha Horton. Now, if you've seen episode three, well, okay, actually, if you haven't seen episode three, don't listen to any of this. It will ruin it for you. But in the episode, Nikisha makes a particularly nail-biting phone call to Jay Wilds. And of course, you know, Nikisha, we've kind of defined you by your relationship to Jay, but obviously that's not who you are. First of all, welcome to the show. And could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, I'm Nikisha. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm a seamstress. I've been sewing for about 20 years. I'm self-employed. That's it, basically.
That's it. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I have a million questions, obviously. First of all, how did you come to be involved in the documentary? Did they contact you? Did you contact them?
They contacted me. I think when the first podcast, maybe a year or two later, something like that, they reached out and I don't even know how they got in contact. I think they said they found me on Facebook and found the phone number to like a flyer or something that was like way down the line. I guess they tried that and they contacted me. And I did reach out to him about it because I was kind of confused. I haven't talked to him in years. And he just like brushed it off. Oh, don't worry about it. It's not that serious. And I left it alone. And then they tried to, they reached back out maybe a year or two later and basically explained stuff. And I started doing my own research with the situation. And then I just decided to, you know, help. I listened to Serial, I want to say maybe like two or three years ago.
Can I ask you, Nikisha, what was your, John's like, this is my job, but I'm just curious. I have so many questions too.
Go ahead, Rabia.
I'm so sorry. What was, when you first heard Serial, I mean, you know Jay better than probably any of us know Jay. What was your initial impression? Like, did you, like vis-a-vis Jay, were you like, did you know any of this? Did he ever tell you anything about his involvement in this case?
He didn't ever tell me. He basically kept that a secret as I know of him now, but I mean, he has mentioned it prior when we talked about his ex-girlfriend, like within like a month or two of us meeting, and he just brushed it off like, oh yeah, you know, we broke up because of the situation that happened in school, and you know, her family didn't want her involved with me, so that's why we broke up, and that was the end of the conversation. So I never knew it was nothing like super deep at the time.
Like, you didn't know he helped bury body type of deep?
Never. No.
Okay.
No.
Well, when did you meet Jay? What year was it?
I want to maybe say 2004, maybe five, something like that.
Oh, that wasn't long after.
Yeah. Do you know how long he and Stephanie have been broken up at that time?
I was assuming around high school time. That's what
okay,
I was
saying. Okay, so been a while.
They still were kind of close friends. Yeah, that's what I was doing. I knew they still had contact and they were like friendly, you know, cordial or whatever, but I figured it was, you know, way down the line when I did meet him.
Now, can I ask about your relationship with him? How long were you guys together?
We were together off and on from that time until, I want to say, till 2012, maybe.
Long time.
Mm-hmm. And your son was born in 2008?
2010.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, this was obviously a very complicated relationship. When you finally broke it off, you had mentioned, at least in the documentary, there was some mention of domestic violence. And was that the reason that you broke it off? Was it a combination of reasons?
It was a combination of reasons. We had been through like so much crazy stuff dealing with him. It was just so many, and not just me, just him, his personality. It was just so many different crazy situations. And when that domestic violence thing occurred, I left him alone for a little bit, but I still tried to have him involved in my son's life. But I just started seeing the anger like coming out, and I didn't want it to happen again. So, you know, when he kind of like threatened me with, oh, you know, I guess he knew he was messing up and I was probably on the verge of leaving. He basically threatened me like, oh, you can't go nowhere if I'm not with you. And that like spooked me a little bit. Like, why are you saying this is my child? I want to take him here. Why do you have to be with me? And when my son got sick, you know, that opportunity came where I was with my son And not with him, I made the decision to leave because it was getting that intense. And I've seen him, you know, drinking and get into that little rage prior before that happened. He never put his hands on me again. I just didn't want that situation to happen again. Like, that was crazy. I've never been in a situation like that ever. And I know at the end of the day, it's a bad situation. It only gets worse. And that's what it was.
Nikisha, was that the first time he had ever battered you?
That was the first time he went to that extent. One time before, like early in our relationship, we had an altercation. We were arguing. He called the police on me. And when the police came, he tried to switch his story up, sound so proper. Like he knew he was talking about, beat up his car. His car was like real rusty and just a mess. And I was shocked the way he portrayed to the police that I was, you know, violent to him and beating his car. I mean, he's way bigger than me, taller than me, stronger than me. So I'm looking at him the whole time like, you're making the story up to the police. You call the police on me and then saying I'm doing this, that, and the third. So the police was like, Ms. Horton, you know, what happened? You talk to me. I was just so shocked at how he flipped it. And I lift my arm up because he had slung me on the ground and I had like a bruise on my elbow. So once they see, you know, that he did sling me on the ground and I was bruised, they locked him up for that. And we had stopped
after
talking
he called
like
the police
for 7 months. Yes.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that you went through that. That is terrifying. And let me just say, situations of domestic violence sound simply terrifying to me. And, you know, all the more complicated when you have a child with the person that this is occurring with. It's just an incredibly brave thing to do to get that person out of your life.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage.
So I remember talking about this with you when we met last year. But, you know, I've been worried about you. Like, you obviously thought long and hard about this, getting involved in a documentary. And made the decision, right. But it's hard. I do worry about you, and I hope it's not going to cause problems for you.
I mean, I hope it doesn't either. Like, my friends are really worried, but they like, you did a good thing, and that's how I feel.
So you made the decision at one point to actually participate in the documentary, and yet another decision to actually make that call, which, as I said, for people watching the show, it's just nail-biting moment of tension because we understand what you're reopening in your life at that point. Can you tell me about that moment a little bit?
It was scary. I wanted to help, you know, but I honestly didn't even think he was going to say anything to me. Like, we don't really talk like that here and there, you know, and I was more shocked that he even tried to open up a little bit to me. But I feel like because we went through so much stuff and I had his back on a whole bunch of things, like even when he was doing messed up stuff, I tried to like look out for him because that was the person I was involved with. Maybe he felt, you know, able to trust me to communicate with me. And I was just shocked because, like I said, we haven't talked in years. So that was just a shock for me that he even opened up and even tried to explain something to me to have my mind clear with it. But it still wasn't clear because it just doesn't make sense. So,
yeah, to me, just listening to it and watching it in the documentary. Now, please tell me if I'm mischaracterizing this, if I'm saying it wrong. But it sounded like he was saying that he had been caught with a large amount of drugs, of pot, and that he tried to come up with a worse crime than that. Or try to at least help the police with a worse crime than that so as to allay the first charge. Is that about what he was saying?
Yes, that's exactly what he was saying. Yes. Oh, I got into some trouble, you know, and I didn't want to be jammed up, so I went along with it. That's basically what he's saying to me. And I think about it like, did he lie to me about it to make me feel like, okay, no need to worry about this, that, and the third? Or was he honest? Like, I don't really know at this point. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is crazy. Just to know that I was even dealing with somebody with all of these issues and all of this baggage is crazy. Overwhelming for real.
But when y'all were together, you were presumably close. Would you have expected him to talk to you about this if he was involved in burying a body? Would you have thought that's something he would have shared with you? Or was he closed off?
If he was in his mood, I don't think he would have said it to that extent. Like, if I probably would have knew a little bit more about it, I might have been able to get him to talk about it. I don't know if he would have been honest and told me everything that was going on. But if he was maybe like tipsy or just feeling himself, he probably do. He likes to brag and stuff. So he might have said something, but I didn't know at the time to even bring it up.
And he was happy to leave you in the dark.
Yes.
Have you spoken to him since you made that call at all?
Oh, yes. I've talked to him on numerous occasions. And since this hit, he's been blowing my phone up. Oh, my God. And that's kind of I don't even know how to take it. Yeah, like every day he calls or whatever. Like I just try to push the issue to keep calling him. But as things was going on with the case, I would like maybe reach out and call. And I just wouldn't say anything just to like fill him out with the whole situation.
So you're responding to his calls. When he calls, you actually are picking up and responding to him?
Yes, I'm responding to him. Yes, it's like an open line of communication now.
Is he angry?
I'm like, okay. I mean, he was angry at first. Like the first day it came out, I just knew that he knew, and he tried to play it off. I was calm about it. I didn't say anything about anything. And then like later on, he cussed me out and said this, that, and the third, and all kind of crazy stuff. So I just thought about it. I'm like, at the end of the day, I didn't know I was not there. You know, I was being honest with everything I said, and I just, that's what it is. So I did reach out to him the next day and text him like, hey, you know, like you don't have to say anything. If you think I want information, you know, I just want you to hear me out. And he called back. I was shocked because he was so mad the prior day. And I just basically let him know, you know, I feel like he's dealing with a lot of demons, and this is why he responds the way he does, and he needs to figure out how to fix it and get it off his chest. So he listened to me, and then after that, he called, but he don't talk about the case or anything, and he just, you know, talks regular. I'm surprised he's not calling about the other, you know, the next episode, because he knew about that. He didn't actually watch it. He said someone told him about it. I don't know. But he's going to sue me, and all. He went off. So now he's calm. He don't want me to talk, so he's probably going to be upset when he finds out here that I'm still speaking out, and that's just what it is. I think that's why he's calling, though, so much to, you know,
keep tabs,
be out and not say anything. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like he's trying to still have some measure of control over the situation.
Exactly. That's how I felt when he was yelling and screaming and, yeah, and texting and texting, like semi-threatening me through text. And I'm just like, whatever. Like, it's late. It's early. It's late at night. I'll talk to you later. I've brushed it off. So that's what he's doing.
What would you do to stay alive? Would you wade through snake-infested water? Would you drink your own urine? Would you cut off your own arm? When the stakes are life and death, you might be surprised at the lengths you go to save yourself. Every Monday, the Parcast Network's podcast Survival demonstrates the human spirit's ability to triumph over deadly adversity and examines the lasting psychological effects of living through a traumatic event. Survival tells high-intensity stories of people in life-or-death situations and explores the strategies they use to survive. You'll hear stories of survival about a pilot and passenger crash landing in the Canadian Yukon in the dead of winter, a man escaping from a North Korean internment camp, and people trapped on sinking ships. Survival. How far would you go to stay alive? Search for and subscribe to Survival wherever you listen to podcast shows. And don't forget to rate and review and tell them what we sent you.
Nikisha, can I ask, kind of what is your sense of his involvement? Do you feel like you have a clear understanding of what he knows and doesn't know? And
I don't have a clear understanding. From what I've seen and what I even heard from his interviews after the fact and what we talk about, I don't have, it doesn't make no sense on a lot of situations. It doesn't make any sense at all to me. What he's saying and what he wants to believe or trying to force everybody to believe, it doesn't make sense. So I really don't even know. It's just so crazy. That's all I can say. It's like so surreal and so crazy at the same time.
I mean, there's a lot of parts of his story that are odd to me and don't make sense to me, but I thought one of the most unbelievable things that and this was what he said was why he listened to Adnan was because he was scared of Adnan. He was scared that Adnan would hurt Stephanie. And to me, it's kind of like what you said about him being a big guy and him telling the police that you're attacking him. It was kind of like the same kind of,
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
He's bigger. He was bigger than Adnan even then. Yeah.
He's very, very strong. And it doesn't make sense. He don't get threatened that easily. Like I don't even see that. I really don't see that.
The idea of Adnan going up to Jay and being like, hey, I know you deal weed. Help me bury this body. And Jay being like, oh, okay, I guess I better.
Man, it was his birthday. It was Stephanie's birthday. All this happened on both of their birthdays. So I'm thinking if it was on my birthday and one of my friends came to me and said, hey, that just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. I don't know.
Yeah, there's many aspects of that have bumped me all along. I mean, Anand's the honor student. Supposedly Jay says, well, I was the connection to the criminal element of the school. which, you know, we've had other people on who say, oh, no, he wasn't, that he was not nearly, you know, actually connected with the real criminal element at that time. But again,
in his mind, mm-hmm. in his mind, he was not no big time nothing. Even when I met him, he was no big time nothing. So, no.
Mm-hmm. But he's always seemed like a very charming person. When I actually watched the video of him on the stand, it's like all of a sudden I could understand. I said, oh, that's why people believe him. He seems very not charming is the wrong word. He just seems I could see why people would believe him. I had no problem buying that.
Right. He know how to switch it up. That's all I can say. If you feel like he fits the part, like that's what he does. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's him all day.
So he never, you know, because he's had many brushes with the law, he had brushes with the law while he was with you?
Yes.
Got it. So was he ever arrested while he was with you?
He was never arrested. He had never, I think the only time he did get arrested when he hit me and he barricaded himself in my apartment and he had to like kick my door down and get him out. That was the only time I seen him with actual handcuffs and, you know, and get locked up. And I don't know, he probably came home a day or two prior to that. Well, after that happened, I didn't talk to him for a minute. So I don't know how long he stayed in there, whatever the case may be. But any other situation, there was never no jail time, no bail, no calling home, none of that.
That's crazy.
Ever. When it happened, I didn't push the issue because I felt like, you know, with the police thing, that's definitely serious. Like the state will pick that up regardless. So I kind of like didn't want to deal with it so much and, you know, and let it do what it do. But it didn't do anything.
He body slammed a cop.
Yeah, he spit on him and all that stuff out the window. It was crazy.
If you could come up with just like an example of the kind of brush with the law he would have that he wouldn't get arrested for, that might have been surprising.
The only one that I know that stands out more to me, where I actually witnessed it when my son came home because he was a preemie, so it was his first day coming home at the hospital, and I took and we went on our way to his grandmother's house, you know, so they could see the baby. And he asked me to, you know, pull over. He wanted to go and do something. I don't even know what he wanted to do. So I said, okay. I dropped him off on one of the streets. And he went like two or three houses down, went towards the house. People ran up in the house, looked like undercovers. So I'm looking, you know, sitting back looking. And I pulled off and went right to the grandmother's house. Like, I think something's happened. I think, you know, this, that, and third, the police or something. And 2 hours later, 3 hours later, he come walking to the house, like, wasn't nothing going on. I'm telling his whole family, something ain't right, and this, that, and the third, and he just comes in like nothing. He didn't say anything about it. He brushed it off, and that was that. I was worried about my baby at the time, so I wasn't really stressing about what he was, you know, doing, but that was definitely odd, because it definitely was a situation. It wasn't no friends, you know.
Yeah, how do you not get arrested if everyone else around him is getting arrested for something?
Right.
Exactly. I think that's why he does the things he does, because he felt like he, you know, not going to get in trouble. I think he gets a high off it, actually.
One of the mysteries of the documentary, and it's been a mystery of this case the whole time, is how, in fact, Jay got the apparent deal that he seems to have gotten. You know, Susan, could you talk us a little through about, because he seems to have many contacts with the police before he does his interview. And then afterwards, you know, he's somehow not doing any jail time while Adnan is in jail with no bail.
Yeah, in episode 3, you do see the QRI investigator give a sort of a summary of like the weird limbo Jay ended up in, where from February, I guess March 1st, really, February 28th till mid-September 1999, he's confessed to murder. He's confessed to accessory after the fact to murder. He's confessed to helping Adnan in this murder, but nothing happens to him. He's not charged. He just goes back and lives his life. And he has this hanging over his head, but he can't get any legal help. He can't get an attorney appointed for him because he's not been charged with anything. And it's not until September that things start kind of moving. And one thing they did not get to so deep into in the documentary they talked about in Serial is how the attorney he ended up getting was Ann Benaroya. She was not a public defender. She was a pro bono who volunteered because Urich called her up and said, hey, will you represent this guy for me? And for some reason, she decided that's the best use of her pro bono efforts. And she agrees. And she helps. She's his attorney. And what happens next is sort of like a strange sentencing hearing where Jay does plead guilty, but the sentencing is held off. He's not actually sentenced, which means at trial, when Jay goes on the stand and testifies, Yurik brings up, like, oh, you're facing 5 years in prison for this, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. And that's true. He pled guilty to a crime that carries a max 5-year sentence. But what's not mentioned, what the jury never learns, is that all along, Jay was never going to get any time. That was what was known from the beginning, is that Jay would be sentenced, the plea would be finalized, he'd be sentenced after a non-trial, and he'd get the sentence he got, which was all suspended.
Wait, so the suspended sentence was actually spoken of before?
They're not going to say that out loud, but obviously, yeah. But it was very clean. Why else would Yurik have gotten an attorney that would be able to trust him and say, hey, when I'm asking for this favor and not putting it in writing, you know I'm good for it. Well, and Ben Arroyo knew he was good for it because they'd worked it out.
But wouldn't he have had to work it out with the judge?
Well, the judge has to prove it, but they managed to get in front of the judge. She was notoriously lenient and forgiving to youthful offenders.
Are judges just picked by lots there, that you just get the judge you get? Or is it a turn-based system? I mean, you know, did Yurik have any control over that?
I don't know, especially back then, how they'd have done it. But yeah, it definitely worked out very well in their favor. Because again, the judge also had agreed to this weird bifurcated sentencing hearing where the guilty plea, like the sentence, like technically he had not actually pled guilty when he testified in non-trial. Like he'd agreed to plead guilty. The sentence was accepted, but it was not entered formally until after the trial. So yeah, you had to have a judge that would also agree to this weird sentencing behavior for no apparent reason.
This was Adnan's first trial or his second trial?
So basically the original sentencing date was for after the first trial for Adnan. But of course, there was a mistrial, so they had to do it again. So they had to hold off his sentencing with the court and reschedule it for after the second trial.
Huh. So the idea being that he, as a witness, is much more credible, you know, when the jury does not know that his sentence has already been suspended, that somehow he's not going to see any jail time from this.
Jay is a much more credible witness when you don't know that actually he's agreed to never serve any jail time if he says the story.
Well, when you put it that way.
Well, I mean, like even Sarah, hear from the juror, I forget her name, but she was like, wait, he didn't serve any time for that? They fully expected he was going to be serving that 5 years.
Yeah. In a jury room, it is frightening that those kind of leaps of logic.
It's not a leap of logic, though. There was definitely that was the intent. Yurik set it up that way. He wanted them to believe that Jay was serving time, even though he knew he was not going to be asking for it.
Were those sentencing trials for Jay the ones that Stephanie actually showed up to?
She shows up and you see the footage of it in the documentary. And you hear, I think, I'm pretty sure Sarah Cannon talked about it on Serial. You see her in the very back row of that final sentencing hearing, the one where he talks about how people look at him like he's a monster. And she's there in the very back. You know, you can kind of see her trying to be inconspicuous, but she's there for him.
Mm-hmm. And now, considering that it was revealed in the documentary that Jen also apparently dealt drugs, there's no evidence that the police ever, you know, came close to charging her or anything like that, is there?
We do know that there were more interviews with Jen than were initially disclosed. And there are files showing that in March, after Jay's second interview, Jen was brought back for further interviews, like two of them that we have no record of other than the fact they happened. So, yeah, we don't know what's going on there.
I also wanted to get to the big bombshell of the episode. Nikisha, I don't know if you saw the episode 3, but it was revealed that one of the witnesses who corroborated Jay's story, that she actually had a college class scheduled for that evening that she could not have missed, which, of course, blows up the entire story that Jay told at trial. Now, a lot of people have sort of been commenting on social media that, you know, it's possible that she forgot the class or, you know, there are people coming up with reasons why that isn't an ironclad reason that she would not have been there that night. But it seems like that there's multiple reasons to believe her. I mean, Susan, obviously, you did a lot of research into the conferences that she was supposedly going to for that school. And that seems to corroborate it as well.
Well, we still don't know, and Christy does not remember at this point, like which conference she was at. That she remembers, her memory ties whatever happened at her place with Anon to a conference. And there's no record of one happening at the place she says she was at happening that day. We still don't, and to me, the bigger takeaway is that Christy's memory has never, ever been tying Anon's visit to her house to her blowing off a class or her having a class mysteriously canceled or her otherwise not appearing for something she really, really needed to go to. That's never, ever been something she remembered. So that, yes, to me, is a clear indication that her memory is not based on that date.
There were some assertions that because the snowstorm was coming, that they might have canceled that class. But of course, the snowstorm didn't start till the next day, which would be, that's pretty preemptive in my mind. I don't know colleges that cancel, you know, cancel classes before the
snowstorm
hits.
Yeah, she lived not far from it, too, from campus.
And I went to UMBC. I went to the same school. I took twice winter semesters, and I distinctly remember that we would have only like four classes in the semester. You cannot miss a class. I mean, simple as that. Because each class was like the equivalent of like three or four regular semester classes, just concentrated because you're getting the same amount of credits. You literally just couldn't even miss the credit hours or else you would, if she missed one class, maybe she could have gotten away with a D, but that would have probably been it. And, you know, this is not that complicated. I mean, you can find other people who have taken winter classes. I don't know. They might have. I don't know if all these years later they're going to have like records of, you know, who attended and didn't attend.
They had. I think yeah, all the records that are available have been obtained. On that
they front. Got. Yeah. Yeah. It's unlikely is what I want to say. I also remember one winter when I was at UMBC and I stayed on campus for the winter session that there was a snowstorm. And this was the kind of like I literally opened up my dorm door or it was like an apartment on campus and the snow was as high as my head. But, you know, we had classes the night before. So, yeah.
Yeah. And to me, the bigger issue is even just the fact that her memory doesn't include it. Like what that.
Right.
If Judge Judy stood out to her, why would not her blowing off a class and it's going to make her fail?
Yeah, that would be if she could say, well, I had a class that day. I blew it off. And that's why I know I was there versus I had a conference that day.
I was going to fail my class now. Yeah. Right. Also, the conference wouldn't have interfered. The conference, she says, ended at like 4. So there's no reason. There's no possible reason why the conference would somehow give her a freebie on skipping 3 classes.
Yeah.
The equivalent of. Yeah.
And Adnan does remember going to Christie's. He just doesn't remember what day. Is that correct?
He does. Yeah. Adnan remembers going to her place once. He has a very vague recollection of once going to this apartment of this girl. He doesn't know her at all. And I guess he was just hanging out with Jay. He remembers being really high. And that's pretty much it. He just doesn't know. Now, you have to remember the first time he's even heard this as part of the narrative is like at his trial almost a year later, almost like, well, many, like 10 months after he's been arrested. So it's not like right after he's arrested, he's been asked, you know, do you remember going there on that day? So many months later, just like with the Asia thing, when he's like, well, I do remember going there once. Maybe it was the same day. Like, it's very hard for him to kind of counter it, on top of which it's not like he ever testified anyways.
But what he does recall is that phone call from the police.
Yeah.
Is that, well, it came actually from Hay's brother. And then the brother put the cop on the line. And that happened when they were in a car somewhere. And he has like a memory of that because he remembers reaching over to the glove box to get the phone and answering it with Jay in the car.
I love beautiful furniture. And having bought a house 2 years ago, I have been very, very careful about actually furnishing it because, you know, this is the kind of stuff that at this point in my life, I'm not somebody right out of college. I'm a grown-up. I'm trying to do the adulting thing, and I'm trying to buy pieces that I know are going to last and I'm going to keep for years, if not decades. At the same time, I need it to be affordable, and that's where Article comes in, because Article makes and sells beautiful, well-made furniture with Scandinavian simplicity that is just so well-designed and modern and affordable because Article eliminates all the layers of traditional retail. So they can keep the prices low and the quality high. There are no showrooms, there are no salespeople, there's just savings. I recently got a gorgeous upholstered rocking chair from Article for my bedroom right next to my bed. It's just well upholstered. And I've never bought a rocking chair before, to be honest, but this was like the kind of thing that I thought, I want to sit in this chair and just read and rock and contemplate and spend hours alone in my little master suite. However, the chair is mostly occupied by my cats and my baby, so, you know, that's how comfortable it is. Not only is the furniture itself affordable, but the delivery is affordable. Anybody who's ordered furniture, whether it's in person, from a retail outlet, online, knows how expensive furniture delivery is. But no matter how many times you order from Article, every single order is shipped at a flat rate of $49. No matter how many pieces you have in that order, $49. Also, if you need some help getting set up, Article has options for in-room delivery, and I had that done. These very nice gentlemen came in, they put on these little slippers on their shoes, they took off all the wrapping of my rocking chair, and they took it up to my room and put it exactly where I wanted it. and your piece will arrive quickly. You don't have to wait weeks and weeks and months for the furniture you want for your home, because in-stock items can be expected in 2 weeks or less. And also, for some reason, if it didn't quite work, if the color wasn't what you were looking for, whatever, it didn't fit the space, they have a 30-day return policy and some of the best customer service in the business. Now look, Article is offering our listeners $50 off their first purchase of $100 or more. Think about that. Buy something for $100, get $50 off. Isn't that ridiculous? To claim this offer, visit article.com/undisclosed. That's all it takes. Go to article.com/undisclosed and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/undisclosed to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
One thing that was mysterious from the documentary for me was Christy saying that the second the police showed up at Jen's, she knew it must have been about that one time when Adnan came over. And I was trying to think.
That's weird.
Yeah, there's nothing in his behavior that to me is such a red flag that she would remember it. But yet, for some reason, it really stuck in her mind. Is there any explanation for that?
To me, it's not conclusive by any means, but to me, it's just either that there had been talk she'd heard possibly from Jen or Jay about what they're being interviewed about or what was going on, or possibly that it was actually a much more recent event. And that's why I was so fresh in her mind. It was like a week ago, not a month and a half ago.
Susan, I remember you had identified some alternative dates that Christy might have been remembering when you realized that the conference, there wasn't a conference on that day. So would any of those dates work if when the police approached Jen, like, I mean, did any of those dates happen before that or were they after that? Do you remember?
I mean, there are a few that could potentially work. It's just one, that's not a complete list of dates it could have happened on, because we don't have full records until the day of Anand's arrest. They only got to like, what, the 20 something? I don't forget the exact date. They don't go all the way through, though. So theoretically, if this happened after the phone records go, we wouldn't have any sign of it. The other thing is incoming calls. We don't know who did it. So we can't see like when Anand had a phone call in the evening from a friend. So it's really hard to correlate the two things because they're very indistinct, both in terms of Christy's
memory. And the location.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's an incoming. We know it's an incoming call. Well, we think, you know, to be fair, we don't know it's an incoming call. For all we know, it could be Anand's calling someone. But yeah, it's not much to go on. And I mean, yeah, it's just very clear when you, even ignoring the class schedule, just go back to look at the statements. The reason Christy and Jen have never actually agreed with what Jay is saying, it's because they're not talking about the same thing.
And I was curious, you know, there's many things that peripheral things that Jen and Jay mention. And I was wondering if they got the day wrong, were there times that Anand might remember actually getting or dropping off Jay at the Westview Mall so that Jen could pick him up? You know, she claims she saw the both of them. Well, if that was on a different day, does Adnan have any recollection of that?
What was Jen's line that Adnan was like, sup, girl, or something? Like, Adnan got out of the car. It's like, hey, what's up?
That wasn't in the documentary, but I believe it. It may have been in the court testimony. But again, yeah, she claimed, and again, this is kind of convenient, that she just happened to have exactly the information the police needed at that moment, which is that she saw Jay and Adnan together with Adnan driving and dropping off Jay at the Westview Mall.
Well, they didn't need that because that's not Jay's story. So that's part they never could fix.
Okay, like, so
they wanted it to be the same. It never was.
But Adnan has no recollection of that?
Adnan, I'm trying to think. I don't think we've ever hit something we should ask Adnan. We should ask him.
Yes. Every time he got high with Jay and saw Jen is probably not.
No, you know what? I'm wrong. Adnan remembers that night actually dropping Jay off and then going to the mosque. That's what I remember him saying. At home. Sorry. Dropping him off at home.
Which,
not at the mall.
Which would roughly match up with what Jay said, you know, burying a dead body.
Yeah.
Other than that small detail, it would sort of match what he said.
I'll definitely confirm with him, though. I'll confirm with him.
Yeah.
Nikisha, what was your experience with Jay about him? Like, did you find him truthful? Or like, would obviously, now you're not together, but like when you're all together, if he said something, would you believe it?
In the beginning I would, but then I started to realize how he tried to like switch the story up or try to, you know, throw in extra words to make himself sound believable. I just started getting used to knowing he's lying and when he's not lying.
What kind of lies would he tell, though? Was he lying, like, just to tell a good story, or was he lying to, like, help himself, or?
I'm trying to put it in words. I think just to make himself look good. That's what it would be. It wouldn't be, like, you know, to, like, get out or anything. It just, he just over-exaggerates things.
So there wouldn't be, like, a poignancy? It'd just be like, hey, look how cool I am?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I was once with somebody who lied about a lot of little things, and you would be like, why on earth lie about that? But in the end, it was a weird control thing. In my particular case, I can't speak to your situation, but in my case,
tiger blood?
I've been there.
yes, that would be maybe we could have some DNA drawn for presence of tiger blood. But it was interesting because it was now everybody's talking about gaslighting. It was a way to sort of control the reality because you were always dealing with them on their terms, and they were always sort of testing whether you were accepting what they were actually offering. Okay. By the way, I'm so sorry that you're going through this and that you're dealing with being scared about this stuff. Thank you so much for coming forward and doing what you're doing because it's, nobody deserves this.
Yes.
I also wanted to ask Rabia and Susan, obviously this being such a big sort of bombshell, were you guys aware of it before the thing came to air?
I wasn't. I watched the episode and I sat up. I was like, wait, what? I mean, Susan had already undermined, kind of the thing because she had determined that there was no conference that kind of made sense. But this was, I had no idea about this.
I knew. I'd been in talks with the team, like when that was all, this was a while ago now. I want to say like over 2 years that they found about the Christie's thing. So it was definitely something they had worked on and established and then confirmed with Christie and, well, not confirmed with Jen, but discussed with Jen, and you saw her reaction.
Either way, I sympathize with her just because she's like, what the hell at this point? There's just nothing left. But actually, Undisclosed had done an amazing job of pointing out how many parts of the state's case depend on people knowing that it's that day, people who already have clearly very foggy memories of it, suddenly deciding that that all happened on the same day. You pointed out the Inez Butler thing when giving Hay the hot fries in front of the school. There was many things that you guys had chased down. You've done a remarkable job of it.
Not so far from the only one who was really confused what day it was, because literally everyone in this case is confused about what day it was. It's impossible to be certain about something. Even when you have an event that's kind of big, like, the call from the police, it wasn't like a call to say she was dead. It was a call to say she hasn't gotten her cousin. And reading through the police notes of the interviews they had of teachers really drives home how unconcerned most of students were. Like, several teachers talk about how, like, oh, yeah, so the new semester started and Hay didn't show up to my class. This is like January 25th, I think, so not long after. And so first day of the new semester, new class, Heyman Lee doesn't show up, is not there for roll call. And the teachers tell the police how, like, yeah, none of the girls seemed that concerned about it. So I just figured she was, and she'd left school before and gone to different schools and come back again. And no one seemed bothered. So you can see why none of them were having this firmly distinct, even if they were worried, none of them were treating it like a murder, like it was.
And they knew she had a new boyfriend. I mean, that outside of school. And,
talking about going to California, apparently.
You know how it is with new relationships. People kind of disappear into that hole.
Mm-hmm. And plus, even the police never checked on dates. Like, the fact that there's this whole idea she was going to a wrestling match to coach it that day when she was clearly scheduled to work at LensCrafters.
So when Officer Adcock actually spoke with Adnan, do we have any real knowledge of what was discussed? Did he say she's just missed picking somebody up, or did she just say her parents are looking for her? Do we know what he actually said to Adnan?
I believe it was that she didn't pick up her cousin.
And I think he asked him, and I haven't looked at his testimony in a bit, but basically if he knew where she was, if he had any idea, like if he had heard from her, if she had told him anything, if she had seen her, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Because many people have argued, oh, it was a very notable day to Adnan. He would have remembered it because, you know, how many days do you get a call from the police asking where your ex-girlfriend is? And, you know, that's a notable experience. And that's
and he recalls it.
He does recall it. He was driving and he was stoned at the time.
Yeah, he was stoned. They weren't driving. It sounds like they were pulled over somewhere. And he reached over to the glove compartment and got his phone because it started ringing in there.
Well, you know, that's something that I think people will be arguing about because it's, you know, there's so many aspects of this case where people argue about, you know, well, what would you have done in that situation? And of course, you know, it's kind of useless because, you know, people are different and they, you know, we don't know how urgent it sounded to the police officer. If the police officer sounded bored and this sounded like no big deal, then it might not have been something that Adnan got alarmed about. You know, it sounded like at the time he was just concerned because he thought she was going to get in trouble with her parents.
Yeah.
But
you know who should remember that day with like ironclad clarity? The dude who says he's burying a body.
Yeah.
I was going to say Don, but okay.
No. Don's the same boat. Like
why is Don in the same boat? That is his girlfriend that he expects to see that day or at least see, like they have plans. He saw her the night before. I mean,
yeah,
like,
but that's
like
the whole day be crystal clear in your mind.
Okay, the day that you're supposed to meet up with your girlfriend after work and then she doesn't show and the police call looking for her. I mean,
he does recall that.
She had Paul. Yeah, well, I'm right, but
Jay has no such excuses. Yeah. Why would he not remember why can't he remember the order of events? Why does he keep remembering things that
Sellers
really didn't happen?
Sellers couldn't remember what day he found the body either, so there's that.
Yeah. So Alonzo Sellers, have you ever, before this documentary, did you ever heard of him? Did you know the name?
No.
Okay.
No.
Not something that's ever come up.
I don't know who that is. I can't even put the face. No.
Yes, he's an enigma and seems to want to remain so. We got a million listener questions that I wanted to get to. We've got one from Amy Johnson who says, I'm rereading Adnan's story right now and just came across that Adnan knew and had told Hay that Jay was cheating on Stephanie. He point blank stated, if anyone ever tried to get between her, Stephanie, and I would kill him or her. So Jay had Adnan's cell phone that afternoon because it was in Adnan's glove box, and Jay borrowed Adnan's car to get Stephanie a birthday gift. But what if he paged or called Hay to set up a meeting with her? ? This literally screams reasonable doubt. And obviously, this is a big accusation. Many people looked at this case and thought, did Jay ever have a motive?
Well, actually, Goody Harris didn't miss that one. That was one, I wouldn't say she effectively carried it off, but that was one she was trying to get at in her defense, such as it was of Adnan, and her constant references to talking to Jay about your very good friend, Jen Pusateri. That was a sarcastic, your very good friend. She was implying that because they'd been together, that was the motive. But to me, that seems... I don't find that a very plausible theory, but that was something Gutierrez did try and bring up at trial. Nikisha, I guess I know it's kind of awkward when you're together, it's an ex, but did Jay ever talk about Stephanie to you, other than saying why they broke up?
Not really. Not too much. I mean, not yet. Not really.
Did you ever meet her?
No, I never met her. I remember one time being at his house and she came in. She didn't come in the house. She came to the back door or whatever. And he tried to lock me in a room. So I guess I wouldn't come out. They talked about 5 minutes outside and that was that. So I never visited met her. I've seen pictures of her, but I never met her personally. No.
That's bizarre.
Yes, that's
weird.
Yeah. But I do know once I did have my son, he had told him about it, sent pictures and stuff like that. I just figured they were still good friends, because I know she had moved on too. So I didn't feel threatened by it at all.
We've got another question from Kelly Gostick, who says, what would happen to Jay if he were to confess that the police made him tell the story he gave at trial? And she also asks, it could be a he. Do you think he actually had anything to do with the murder or disposal? And you guys have answered that quite a bit that, in fact, no, you don't think he has anything to do with it. But what would happen to Jay at this point?
The same thing that happened to him before. Would it change anything? I don't know. He wouldn't get in trouble for it. I don't see any scenario in which he would suffer consequences legally or criminally. That wouldn't be the issue. Whether it could actually change anything, I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical it could. But yeah, no. I mean, theoretically, you could be like a perjury prosecution, but that, in real life, that's nothing that's ever going to be pursued or could be pursued right. in this circumstance.
I just wanted to ask Nikisha a question before we finished up with the social media question. Sorry, and this didn't occur to me earlier. Well, I have all kinds of questions but I didn't ask earlier. Nikisha, I don't know. I mean, if you're not comfortable answering it, you don't have to. But I know you said that you're still kind of confused about Jay's involvement. But my question is, has he ever said to you directly that, just directly, that I was there, I saw it with my own eyes. Like I buried this body.
Yes.
Yeah, said that.
Not buried. He didn't say I buried it. But I mean, like recently, like I said, he's calling and calling. So, you know, I had to ask him. Like I started asking, he started getting mad. I just started asking questions like, well, did you? Like, it's just not adding up. Like, you know too many details. How would somebody know this, that, and the third? The threading and the, like, that's too much. You know, if you're going through a traumatic situation, you don't pinpoint every single little teeny thing. It just sounds crazy to me. Like, I don't know. So I asked him that, and, you know, he just brushed it off. Like, well, first he tried to tell me that, of course, he didn't say anything to me or whatever. I don't know. He maybe thought I was recording. I don't even know. But then I was like, so, you know, it just doesn't add up. You know, you need to talk to somebody. He's like, well, I seen it. Like, I said, do you really think he did it? Like, what was it? Because you're saying one thing, you putting it out there as something else, and it's not making sense. That's all I'm saying. He told me basically he's seen it. He's seen the body. He's seen it screaming. He's seen the body. I'm like, if that's what you believe and that's what it is.
Did he say where?
I feel like if the he didn't say where. He just was basically like, I know he did it. I seen the body.
But he's never said he was involved in the burial.
No, he didn't tell me nothing about that. This is recently, like since the whole episodes and stuff. Yeah.
Because it does sound like Jay keeps going back to that. He's like, I believe he did it. Yeah. He's always like, I believe he did it. I know he did it. But he never really gives specifics.
Yeah.
And he's given so many locations for where.
I said, what do you mean? He's like, well, somebody else did it. Why would they frame him? And I'm like, nobody's even really trying to say you did it. But it's like, you need to tell the truth. Like, the story is not adding up, period. Like, you don't understand. If I was an outside looking in with the facts, it doesn't add up. And he's like, I seen it. I seen the actual body. I know he did. I seen the body. Which still don't make sense for him to even say that to me. It's just crazy.
Hey, Nikisha, if he says that again, try and get him to say where he saw it. We can add it to the list of places he claims to have seen it. Was it in a trunk? Did he even say it was in a trunk, or did he say he saw it somewhere else?
No, he just said he's seen it. Like, basically,
did he see it non with
eyes on that body? No, he didn't even say that. I didn't even ask him that. He just was basically saying he know he did it because he had seen the body. That's what he told me.
In a picture, in a photograph, in the police station. Yeah. All right. Sorry. We totally hijacked the social media questions.
Yes. There's only really one more. So the last one is from William Eggert, who says, you all discussed the new Jay call and how this new story of the police picked up Jay. Could the police, with Adnan's cell records, sit on Jay until he commits a crime to increase their leverage in the first interview?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Like, that seems like an unnecessary stretch.
Yeah.
I don't think they need to do that.
Yeah, it sounds like from the context that there may have been other things he was involved in that were real, that they didn't have to sit on him, you know, and wait for one, that they were already having some involvement with him at that time.
Also, it's Baltimore. Do they really care if it's a real thing?
That's a good
point.
I mean,
they pulled his arrest in late January, I think the 27th, maybe. I mean, that was like a obviously pretextual stop where they pulled him over because he was driving while black, but they claimed he didn't like signal in time or something. And they found a little bit of weed. Like, that's all it took for them in that time. I mean, they could just do the same thing. It's pretty much, I mean, you've seen the videos, and I assume, of Baltimore police just planting drugs on body cameras rolling. So, yeah, I don't think you'd need to have any kind of elaborate plot there if that's what you're trying to do.
Well, that's the last of my social media questions. Did you guys have any last questions for Nikisha?
Oh, gosh.
It's a million.
Not for the air. Not for the air.
Yes, I know. We gotta go out to a bar sometime and spend the evening.
Good luck. Thank you for coming forward. But
thank you again.
I'd be lying to say one word for you.
Yes. Thank you so much. I think, you know, what you've done is really, really brave. And I just am so grateful you were willing to come on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And maybe Jay needs someone he can talk to. He obviously does talk to you despite everything. So,
yes, that's true. It's surprising, but it's definitely true.
I'm guessing he doesn't have a lot of friends anymore. So good luck.
Right.
And thank you, Susan and Rabia. And I'm very much looking forward to episode 4 of the documentary. You guys know what's going to happen, and I don't. So if I call you crying, you'll understand. Or just enraged. I may just be enraged. We'll see.
Yeah. And John, thank you for hosting the series Addendum. And I know you're not going to be with us next week, but we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for including me. And I am just amazed and appalled, unfortunately. But I still have a tremendous amount of hope. And thank you guys again. And that's it for the show today. I want to make one final appeal. This is my last episode of the Addendum for this particular series. But if you could possibly find your way to donating to Adnan Syed's Legal Defense Fund, it has been relaunched. It is at launchgood.com/freeAdnan. And you can donate however much you want. Obviously, he's facing quite a legal hill ahead of him. And any amount you could donate would be incredibly helpful. And the Undisclosed Patreon is still going strong. That is patreon.com/undisclosedpod. And there you will find bonus episodes with Susan, Rabia, and Colin. And you'll also be able to help the podcast, which we are so appreciative of. If you feel like checking out our website, it is undisclosed-podcast.com. There's a list of all the criminal justice-related charities that you can make a donation to there. And I am donating all of my fees for these special episodes to the Adnan Syed Legal Trust Fund. You remember the one I mentioned earlier. You can follow Undisclosed on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at their handle at UndisclosedPod, and send any questions with the hashtag UDAddendum. I want to thank Hannah McCarthy for audio production, Patrick Cortez, who composed our addenda theme, and Mithil Telhan, our project manager. Thank you so much, and have a great week.